Hello, and welcome to another segment of Open House here at Community Media. I'm Raymond Galker. We have a great show for you today. This is a special show. This is a show for Memorial Day. And in our backyard, we have the Gettysburg National Park, and Memorial Day actually was born as a result of the Civil War. So what a best moment than to have the superintendent of the Gettysburg National Park, Steve Sims, here. And you brought with you Chris Gwynn.
Correct.
And what is your title, Chris?
I am the Chief of Interpretation and Education at the battlefield.
Okay. We'll start with you, Steve.
All right.
Steve, what is your position, the superintendent of the National Park Service here in Gettysburg? What is your chores? What are you set out to do?
What's my mission? Well, yeah. Raymond, first of all, thank you so much for inviting us out here. It's a really wonderful opportunity for us to talk to the public about what we're doing in the park and how people can connect to the mission of the National Park Service, and specifically Gettysburg National Military Park and Eisenhower National Historic Site. So as superintendent of these two parks, I'm responsible for the overall operation of the parks. And so, you know, we have a budget that's authorized by Congress, and we administer that budget in preserving and protecting these resources while at the same time providing for visitor enjoyment. So we have a mission that kind of is in conflict with itself sometimes, because to preserve and protect things and provide for visitor enjoyment, sometimes those two just don't work together. So we have to manage through that to protect those resources.
And have you always been in a position like this prior to coming to Gettysburg?
No. So Gettysburg is my second post, if you will, in the National Park Service as a superintendent, and has been the most rewarding in my career to have that responsibility, this responsibility of being in charge of Gettysburg is very humbling. And to work with folks like Chris and his staff, and the National Park Service, the volunteers, our partners, it's very fulfilling to work here. But this isn't my first career either. It's actually my third. So I started in the Army.
Okay.
So I served in the Army for 6 years as an officer, as an engineer officer. And then when I got out of the Army, I was a consultant engineer. And that's how I got introduced to the National Park Service. One of my jobs as a consultant was working at the National Mall in D.C., and that's when I really fell in love with the National Park Service mission and its preservation mission, because it's, you know, national parks are the textbook of America. You know, everyone can learn about America, learn about their history, their natural resources, their cultural resources, and it's so important to preserve that, so people can learn from that and experience it and enjoy it and find their own connection to America.
And you have a lot of visitors that come every year, do you not?
We do, yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a number on that?
So the park visitation is about a million, just under a million visitors per year. And they're all over the battlefield and Eisenhower National Historic Site. So we got about 6,000 acres that we manage.
Okay.
Everything from agricultural leases to cannons and monuments and historic farmhouses and cultural landscapes, just a lot of fun.
How many acres did you say?
6,000.
6,000 acres. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have all the acres, you have all the monuments, you have many different skirmishes and reasons that one area of the battlefield is important compared to another, and then you have volunteers that help. You have paid staff that helps, and you're answerable to a board or.
I'm responsible to the public.
The public.
This is your park. This
okay.
is the public's park.
Okay.
And I serve at the pleasure of the president,
there you go.
Congress, and I'm entrusted with this responsibility, which I don't take lightly. It's mm-hmm. It's a great responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is that you enjoy it, and
absolutely.
You're honored to have this position. I hear
absolutely.
Cool. And then, Chris, you are the Chief of Interpretation and Education.
That's correct.
Okay. Can you tell us
what that means?
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to think is when you come to Gettysburg, any way that you engage with the story, the tour that you might take on the battlefield, the experience you have in the Museum and Visitor Center, the interpretive tablet you read out on the battlefield, the trail guide, or if you're connecting with us virtually, digitally, the content that you consume. Me and my team have a hand in crafting that and shaping it. We work very closely with the licensed battlefield guides, which are an institution kind of unique to Gettysburg, where they'll give you a personalized tour of the battlefield. We work very closely with our friends at the Gettysburg Foundation, who help us manage the Museum and Visitor Center. So when you come to the battlefield park, when you engage with the battlefield park, the experience that you have, how you connect with the story, that's what me and my team deal with.
And that must be extremely rewarding.
Absolutely. It's both rewarding, it's also incredibly challenging. But you know, like Steve, it's an honor to do the work. I pinch myself from time to time that my office is the Gettysburg battlefield, right? That's pretty nice, right?
Right.
And when I first came to Adams County when I was 9 years old, okay. I grew up in Massachusetts, and we were going on a family road trip down, I think it was Washington D.C., and we went to Hershey Park, and we went to Gettysburg. And I don't remember a thing about Hershey Park, but I fell in love with Gettysburg, and the idea that I get to come to work at the battlefield every day is just, it's amazing, it's awesome.
So you're from Massachusetts?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. How long have you had your position here in Gettysburg?
So I started at Gettysburg in 2003 as an intern. I was attending Gettysburg College.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they had it was called work study, where I would go and get some professional experience, and in turn I'd get a stipend that I could go buy food with. And so I started as an intern working in the park library, became a seasonal ranger working out on the battlefield, leading tours and interpretive programs. Fell in love with it, knew I wanted to do it, but these jobs are few and far between, and they're very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I begrudgingly and somewhat painfully left Gettysburg, worked at a number of other parks, including the National Mall, where Steve also worked. And was just fortunate enough to be able to come back in 2012 as a full-time permanent ranger. And then in 2018, became the chief.
So over the period of time that you've been here, you have seen a lot of changes.
I've seen a tremendous number of changes.
Especially in your department.
Well, when I first started, the Museum and Visitor Center that we now have wasn't built. We were working out of the old buildings, which... that was a challenge in and of itself, right? So I've seen a lot of changes to the battlefield park, landscape rehabilitation. We're working on the Little Round Top rehabilitation project right now. Worked with a lot of wonderful people. Seen a lot of evolution on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. So one of the exciting parts must be the chance to have a vision and to share and grow that vision for the park. Can you share what your vision is for the park?
It's relatively simple. And my vision is providing access. I want everyone to have the opportunity to access their national parks. And whether that they can come physically to the park, and we have accessible trails, and we have accessible exhibits, and accessible interpretive signage, or if they aren't able to visit, that we have access virtually. And so I really want people to find their connection. Mm-hmm. And so finding their connection requires access, but also requires diverse storytelling. Mm-hmm. And telling a lot of different stories from different perspectives and lenses. And so it's relatively simple, but difficult.
Mm-hmm. So you have virtual experiences currently?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know if Chris wants to
tag
on with
to.
That. Yeah.
So your viewers may be interested in this, but this spring, since really early April to today, we've had over 5,000 students on field trips come through our program, either in park or increasingly online, digitally. And it's synchronous, so it's one of our interpretive team or one of our educators talking live to a classroom. And they may be in Utah, they may be in Littlestown, they may be at a military base in Germany or Japan. And so, these digital experiences and programs that we've crafted, It's a way to, you know, Steve was talking about access, it's a way to expand access beyond the physical boundaries of the park. So we can connect visitors who, because of distance, time, money, whatever it is, may not be able to get here physically, but we can still engage with them, with our story, with our resources. So we do a lot of that. If you go on our website, you'll find a virtual tour of the battlefield that you can take from the comfort of your own living room, or you can bring it to the battlefield park with our National Park Service app, which has a tour of the entire battlefield on it that's GPS enabled. It is the number one app in the National Park Service, the Gettysburg Auditor, more than all the other parks combined almost. And so we've had a lot of success building out these virtual experiences. Another thing you could do, you could go to our website, www.nps.gov/GETT, and you can take 360-degree tours of the interiors of some of our historic buildings, be it the David Wills House, where Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address, or the Abram Bryan Farm, home of a free African American, or even the Eisenhower Farm out at Eisenhower National Historic Site.
And this is something that you saw developed.
We did. We worked very closely with the team at the park, the interpreters, the team over at Eisenhower, our communication specialist, our visual information specialist, to use new technologies to tell stories, new and old, in unique ways.
And is there other park services are trying to do the same, are doing the same, or just getting started?
Here's what I'll say to that. There are over 400 unique parks. They're all different. They're all doing awesome work. Do I think that we do the best work? Yes, I do.
Of course.
Yes, I do. No, it's partially in jest, but partially true. You know, I'm very proud of everything that Gettysburg does, the work that we do. But again, each park is unique. Each park is different. They have their own story. And it's, I think, the past couple years have seen a lot of adaptation and creative thinking in our parks to tell our stories in new and different ways.
And Steve, how long have you been the superintendent?
Since January of 2020.
So you came in when some of this was already in process, or?
So I got here a couple months before the pandemic.
Okay.
So when the pandemic hit and everything shut down, pretty much shut down, and we did turn a lot of focus to digital content and developing that digital content because we wanted to make sure that people could still visit their parks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really helped us refocus in a way. The silver lining, I would say, one of the silver linings is that we could have refocused some of those in-person resources to creating digital content. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd feel the same way, Chris, but
that's
how I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we were doing it a little bit at Gettysburg before the pandemic, but it really forced us to embrace some new ways of doing the work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of past that now, mostly. But that's still an itch that I think people want to have scratched, right? They still want to be able to access that content on their own time, on their own schedule. And that's never going to replace a visit to Gettysburg.
No.
It's not the same thing. But what I think it does do is it introduces people to the park. And maybe it maybe it's an investment in future visitation. Because if I was, little Chris Gwynn in, 1992, and I could go, they didn't have online, but if I could go and explore Gettysburg from the comfort of my own home, that would just make me want to visit the battlefield more.
And you do it over and over and over as far as just getting on the virtual tour and checking things out.
Yeah.
I guess every time you get on that, there's something that you, something new that you missed or...
Well, when we're constantly adding to it, too. And so it allows individuals like me at the park level to add content, to try different things. And so, it's a fabulous tool that we have.
So, Steve, you and Chris must have a great relationship and really appreciate each other because this is exciting. This says a lot about your leadership also. Because to encourage Chris and the other people that work for you to be creative and do things that haven't been done before and give them the support they need to do that, and have the vision of what it can be, speaks a lot.
Well, it's easy when you have excellent people that work for you,
mm-hmm.
and who also have their own vision and expertise. He's the subject matter expert in the history of the battlefield, the interpretation, education, public history. I'm not. And it just enables me to listen to the great ideas that he and his staff have, and I'm like, you know, if I were a regular visitor, I would say, yes, mm-hmm. that's what we want. Mm-hmm. And he's done a phenomenal job. He's got a great team.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you, Steve.
That's what we're waiting for, Chris. But Chris, as an educator, it must be exciting also to have the ability to be creative and put information out in a vibrant way.
Certainly, and it's, you know, it's nice to have individuals at the park who value the work that you do and see the value in it. So I'll give you an example. I'll give you a real world scenario. The team at the park wanted to host an event for individuals with sensory sensitivities, right? So you may be on the autism spectrum. You may have PTSD, anything like that. And for individuals that fit within that demographic, the experience of visiting the museum and the cyclorama and the orientation film, it can be a lot. It's you know, it mimics the sound of combat. It's very loud and cacophonous. And I think it was excluding a segment of the population that might otherwise find value in it. And so, you know, the team pitched this idea, well, what if we had a special event where we turned all the sound way down and we just made the whole thing much calmer, much more relaxed, and what if we offered it to them for free, which is something we don't normally do. And, you know, we pitched that idea to Steve and the management team, and they were absolutely supportive of it. And without that support, that event probably wouldn't have happened. And looking back on this year, that was one of the things that, you know, I'm really proud of. We had over 100 people visit the park for that special event. And so it's very much a collaborative exercise. And, you know, it's wonderful to have people support you and help you, you know, facilitate your vision.
And what's it like to see the people come in to your demonstrations, your opportunities that you have for them to learn, or just put their feet on the battlefield, and then you see that it does something to them, either in their expressions or in their heart or in their language. What's that like?
Well, I think you just nailed it. You know, when you see the reaction that somebody has to visiting the battlefield, and they find that connection, that personal connection. You know, whether it's, you know, troop movements, or whether it's, you know, a story about an enslaved person, they find that personal connection, and then they see the relevance in why Gettysburg is important, why it is a national park. You know, because one of the things that I continuously think about is that, you know, we can all think about or say what's important, but it's the public, it's the visitor that knows what's relevant. And so we're always listening mm-hmm. to our visitor to tell us what's relevant so that we can make sure they hear those stories or have those experiences. And when we can make those connections, it really just supports the National Park Service mission as a whole, because without the public, without their support, we cease to exist.
Right.
So when you're able to see those reactions, you know you're doing your job right.
Do you have any moments that you could remember of? Oh, many of them, right?
Oh, I have a lot. Yeah, so I have a lot of them. And yet, one thing it's, I think, important to note that, you know, we're fortunate enough to work at a place where most people go to on vacation, right? So they want to go there. They're excited to be there. And, you know, that enthusiasm more often than not is infectious. But when you work at a place like Gettysburg, you have experiences that, you know, on one hand are very rewarding, and on the other hand, it can be incredibly profound. So just to give you an example, I gave a tour of Little Round Top to a soldier who had been on campaign in Afghanistan. And he was telling me after the tour that he and his comrades, his troops, they found themselves in a particularly tight spot in this battlefield where he had to make a very difficult decision. And he said in his mind he remembered visiting Little Round Top as a younger man, and he remembered the story of one of these commanders that was on the hill and was in a situation very much like his own. And he thought to himself on the battlefield in Afghanistan, well, if that man could do that and get out, maybe I can too. And so even if it was at a subconscious level, that was a history with utility, right? It inspired him in the presence. That was obviously a very relevant experience to him. You know, on the other hand, I've met people who, as very young individuals, remember meeting Civil War veterans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that sometimes I think, you know, our visitors look at the Battle of Gettysburg, and to them, it's ancient history. But in reality, we're only separated by that battle for, you know, a couple of generations. Mm-hmm. And it's that generation is still within the living memory of some people that I, you know, I get to meet on the battlefield. So, and then, you know, on the other hand, you have the young people that come to Gettysburg on their field trip, and they see it through, you know, a completely different lens. And it's very rewarding. It's very rewarding to be able to interact with the people coming to this battlefield and to hopefully help them find their own meaning and make their own connection and find their own relevance in it.
Steve, you are a native of Pennsylvania?
No, I'm not.
No?
California.
That's right, California. But you made your way to Philadelphia.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were at Philly before you came?
Yep. So California is a long time ago, over 30 years ago, and I haven't been back. After I joined the Army, moved around a little bit, but then when I got out, I landed in Virginia first. So when I worked at the National Mall, I was commuting from Virginia, and then I had the opportunity to work at Independence National Historic Park in Philly. So then I went to Philadelphia, spent 10 years there, worked in a regional office setting up there as well, and then the opportunity to work at Valley Forge came up. And so then I went to Valley Forge and commuted from Philadelphia from there until Gettysburg came around.
Cool. I'd like to get into Memorial Day.
Sounds great.
You know, your park is here to remind us of many things. And there's many souls that paid the price so that our union could be won. But what does Memorial Day mean to you, Steve?
You know, it's very important to me. I have classmates of mine, friends of mine, who were killed in action, serving in the military. And so every Memorial Day, I remember them, first and foremost. But then serving here in Gettysburg and having the awesome responsibility of the Gettysburg National Cemetery, you know, there's 7,000 more souls that gave the ultimate sacrifice in that National Cemetery, and having the responsibility, the awesome responsibility to honor them every year it's hard to put into words how meaningful that is, and it's such something that's hard to put into words. So it's something I take very seriously. It's a community event. And so we work with a lot of different partners, and we really just want to make sure that we honor those that gave that sacrifice. Because without them, as you said, you know, we wouldn't have this union and wouldn't have America as we have it today. And so they volunteered to do that. And, you know, they're heroes in their own right. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we continue to honor them and demonstrate that, especially for younger folks who may be thinking about serving their country. You know, they need to see that we certainly respect and honor those that serve.
Chris, what does Memorial Day mean to you?
Memorial Day for me is a time to humanize the past. So at Gettysburg, when you go through the museum or you go on a tour of the battlefield, we tend to throw out a lot of numbers. So during Pickett's Charge, there were 15,000 casualties. Over the 3 days of battle, you know, 28,000 men were wounded, 12,000 men were killed. And those numbers, I think they're so large, it's difficult to comprehend. It's difficult to look at these numbers as anything other than a statistic. Memorial Day, especially at Gettysburg, though, offers us an opportunity to sit, to pause, and to really reflect on the fact that these individuals who fought on this battlefield 160 years ago, they were real people, just like you and me. They had people they loved. They had hopes, dreams, aspirations. And for many of them, those hopes, dreams, aspirations ended on the battlefield. And they ended on the battlefield because they believed enough in the idea of America and American freedoms that that they were willing to leave their homes and families behind and go off and participate in this struggle. And it would be these individuals that Lincoln would come to honor with his Gettysburg Address, where he talked about a new birth of freedom and remembering and honoring those who here gave that last full measure of devotion. So when I think of Memorial Day, that's what I think of, the stories of the men buried in that cemetery, who they were, what they believed. And you know, every Memorial Day we have an opportunity to go into that cemetery, walk down those rows of graves, and think about who those men were.
Great, great job. I love your the concept. They were just like us. I mean, you know, a visitor that goes to Gettysburg, you know, that could have been that person, being a male, that would at that time period have the choice to fight in the battle. You know, that person, like you said, had a family, wanted the best for their family, had dreams. But they made the sacrifice because they believed in America and freedom. So that was awesome. What do you have, anything special at the park for Memorial Day?
Yes. On Memorial Day, there's a parade that starts at 2 p.m. and it terminates at the Gettysburg National Cemetery, where we have a commemorative event at 3 p.m. This year, the keynote speaker is Hal Kushner. He's a retired Army colonel from the Medical Corps, a doctor who was a POW in Vietnam. Okay. So he's going to give the keynote. We have the Gettysburg Borough Mayor Freeling is going to say a few words, and Michelle Crow from the Library of Congress. So that's happening at 3 o'clock. At 5:30, we have a licensed battlefield guide tour, free tour of the National Cemetery to talk about the aftermath of the battle and the development of the National Cemetery. And that free tour ends at the Soldiers National Monument, where we're going to have 100 Nights of Taps. So 100 Nights of Taps kicks off on Memorial Day at 7 o'clock and runs for 100 days, so through Labor Day. And it's an educational program about one individual and, well, it commemorates specifically one individual that's buried there in the National Cemetery, but it honors all of them and their service at the Battle of Gettysburg.
So if someone was interested in just planning their day, they can go to the website and look up what you have planned for Memorial Day. Is there a place?
Yeah, website, social media, even in the Gettysburg Times, and other press outlets, there's definitely a lot of sources to know what's happening in Gettysburg on Memorial Day.
Cool. Chris, what's the history of Memorial Day?
Well, that's a good question. Memorial Day is born out of the tragedy of the American Civil War. So from 1861 and 1865, you have almost 700,000 men that die as a result of the war. It's North and South. And you know, most mid-19th century Americans believed in a thing called the good death. And the good death was a way of thinking about the end of life, where when you die, you want to be surrounded by your family and loved ones. You want to make your peace with God. When you're buried at home in your hometown cemetery or your family plot. And you know, that's how Americans in the mid-19th century, that's how they looked at the end of life, that death. The American Civil War shatters that notion. Now you have individuals dying far away, surrounded by strangers. You have individuals who get buried in these shallow graves all across the American South. And so the Civil War causes Americans in the North and South to rethink how they die and what that means. And no one in mid-19th century America could have envisioned the enormity of human loss during the American Civil War. So if America today lost a similar proportion of individuals, it would equate to almost 7 million. So that's the totality of loss that we're talking about. And the individuals that survived the war had to figure out ways to process that, to commemorate it, to acknowledge it. In most likely 1865 in Charleston, South Carolina, a group of recently emancipated people, former slaves, went out to a Union Cemetery outside of a former prisoner of war camp, and they decorated the graves of the fallen Union soldiers who had died there with flowers and wreaths. And that started a tradition, a trend called Decoration Day, where you'd go and you'd decorate the graves of fallen soldiers, be it in your hometown or at these newly established national cemeteries that the government funds at mostly battlefield sites, Antietam down in Maryland, Chattanooga out in Tennessee, and of course, Gettysburg National Cemetery. And so they'd lay wreaths and flowers and graves, they'd decorate the grave, and over time, that became what we would know today as Memorial Day, where you remember, it's about memory, you remember those who gave their lives. It's born from the American Civil War.
So it'd be a great place to go to honor the people who have passed away, not only during the Civil War, but serving the country in many different ways, many different places. A lot of people gave the ultimate sacrifice.
One of the things that your viewers and most visitors to Gettysburg probably don't realize is when you go to that Gettysburg National Cemetery, the core of it is established as a result of the Battle of Gettysburg. So in that center section, you have about 3,512 United States soldiers who died during the battle. But the cemetery keeps growing. And as you know, the course of American history unfolds over the last 160 years, as Americans find themselves engaged in different conflicts and new wars across oceans, the cemetery, unfortunately, gets bigger. So when you go to Gettysburg, you'll find Gettysburg dead, but you'll also find individuals who died on December 7th, 1941, at Pearl Harbor. You'll find individuals who died during the Vietnam conflict. You'll find individuals who died fighting in France during World War I at the Battle of the Bulge, D-Day. And so in many ways, that cemetery is really a reflection of American history over the past century and a half. And if your viewers are interested, on Saturday, May 27th at 6 o'clock in the evening, two of our park rangers are gonna lead a tour of the cemetery. They're gonna pick out two individuals buried in that cemetery from each of America's conflicts, from the Civil War to Vietnam, and tell their story. Another way to humanize the individuals buried there.
What date is that again?
Saturday, May 27th at 6 o'clock p.m. inside the National Cemetery.
Okay. I did not know that there are still people being buried at the cemetery there at Gettysburg.
The cemetery officially closed to new burials in the 1970s. However, if your next of kin is buried there, you're grandfathered in. So we do have interments from time to time, but otherwise it is closed to new burials.
Okay, so you have to have a relative, next of kin, and do you have to have been serving in the service, the Army or Navy or something like that, in order to be there?
So let's say you're a wife and your husband is buried in that cemetery.
Okay.
They're buried there in 1969.
Okay.
You are entitled to rest with your husband in that cemetery.
Okay.
So you yourself didn't necessarily need to serve,
right,
but as long as your next of kin did and is buried there, then yes.
Cool. So you have this event coming up. You have other events coming up, but always have something going on, do you not, Steve?
We'll let Chris talk about the other programming happening throughout the summer.
Memorial Day, we'll have Living History on the Battlefield, or Memorial Day weekend, rather, May 27th and 28th. We'll have Living History reenactors on the battlefield at three different locations, offering firing demonstrations, portraying camp life during the American Civil War. We have a full menu of ranger programs, hikes, walks, talks that take place virtually every day. I'd encourage you again to visit our website for that full schedule. Also, don't forget to visit Eisenhower National Historic Site, where they have their own special programming. You can tour Eisenhower and Mamie Eisenhower's home. There's a tremendous amount going on.
A lot going on. So, Steve, if someone's planning their trip to Gettysburg, do you suggest that they do certain things before they get here?
Well, one suggestion I have is check out our website. I think we mentioned that a few times, and I'll say it again, www.nps.gov/GETT, and check out all the activities that are happening there. Also go to our Eisenhower website, nps.gov/EISE, and check out all the planning or the activities that are happening there. So you can get a really good idea before you visit, you know, what's happening? Because there are, you know, like we mentioned earlier, Little Round Top is closed, and so you want to know what those alerts are so that you don't have some expectation and be disappointed. So you want to know what those closures are going to be. But also when you get here to Gettysburg, come to the Museum and Visitor Center. Come see us at the information desk and talk to a ranger and get the most current up-to-date information on programming and ranger activities or tours that are happening. We also have at our information desk a representative volunteer from Destination Gettysburg, which is okay. The Adams County DMO, and so they can talk about what's happening across the county.
Okay. There's a lot. If someone comes to Gettysburg, there's a lot to do outside and in the outside the park.
Yeah.
However, the park is all over, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just not the national park. The war occurred.
Yeah, we love the visitors come see us, mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things to do in Adams County, mm-hmm. A lot of activities, a lot of different museums, and different things that people will find interesting or relevant to them. And so that all that information is available at the Museum and Visitor Center.
And you don't have to live 50 miles or more away to enjoy Gettysburg. Gettysburg's here for us Adams Countyans, York Countyans. There's a lot of fun to be done in Adams County, in Gettysburg. Thanks so much for coming in. We greatly appreciate it, Steve, Chris. Thanks for being here. We're going to end up, I'm going to give you a chance to say anything. I might have missed something that you might have said or whatever, but this is your opportunity to close this moment up with the public. Is there anything you'd like to say, Chris?
I just want to thank you again for allowing us to be here talking a little bit about the work that we do at Gettysburg, why our story matters. And I'd encourage you to connect with us via online or in person in the park.
Steve?
Well, second the thanks, Raymond. Really appreciate the opportunity to come out. And for our visitors, this is your park. These are both your parks, both Eisenhower and Gettysburg. Come see them. There's a connection for you.
Thanks a lot again. Looking forward to future adventures where we can celebrate the park and get the information out here at Adams County. Here at Community Media for Adams County. Thanks for watching this segment of Open House. And during Memorial Day, or not even Memorial Day, any day, take the time out to realize that many people gave the ultimate sacrifice so that we can have options, opportunities, and freedoms. So please recognize that, especially during this holiday, Memorial Day. Thank you very much for watching this segment. Until we have a chance to see each other again, be kind and remember, you are the best.